Bible, to where would we like to go? Lamentations. Lamentations chapter 3. And just to remind us that in Jeremiah chapter 7, where we are, in Jeremiah chapter 7, you have the God laying on the line that they could fix their unbelief, but they weren't going to. And they were counting on the temple. They were counting on the fact that God has chosen Zion and Jerusalem and the temple. And therefore, since God has chosen that, there's no way anyone in the world can possess it or have it apart from God and the people of God. So they went and used that place falsely, wrongly, counting on that temple, not counting on the God of the temple, counting on God to keep the temple, which was their hideout. That's where they lived. That's where they the gang, Israel, headquarters for the rebels was the temple. And so if Nebuchadnezzar comes, he can't touch us because we're hidden in the sanctuary. We're safe. No one can get us here. A place of refuge. Now, in order to apply that section, if I may, in Lamentations chapter 3, you have Jeremiah, the weeping prophet. And the weeping prophet is because, from Lamentations, because the weeping prophet is what? He's having to see a ruined Jerusalem, a ruined temple, everything gone, and the Babylonians have taken over. It is a terrible, terrible thing for Jeremiah to see the conditions. And thus Lamentations is written to give you the heart of Jeremiah and thus of the remnant of Israel as they see the wonderment of all that God had prepared and promised vanish in ruins. And Lamentations is all about that. Now, having said that, you lose. Where is the hope, the expectancy? Lamentations chapter 3, and picking up if I can, in chapter 3 and in verse 8, verse 18. Lamentations 3 and 18. And I said, my strength and my hope is perished from the Lord. Looking out at everything, all collapse. No hope. There's nothing. Nothing to work with. Nowhere to go. It's the end. Collapse. A complete collapse. But no. Not so. And he said, my hope is perished. But when I looked at the conditions and the circumstances and the crowd of, and the character of the people, not only of the merciless Babylonians in one sense and the rebellious Jews on the other, God helped him remember. Thus, verse 19, remembering mine affliction, and my misery. The wormwood, remember bitterness, and the gall, poison. My soul hath them still in remembrance. It's sitting right on top of me, right in my head and heart. And it's humbled in me. I'm brought down very low. I'm collapsing, as it were. This I recall, verse 21, to my mind. When I realized where there was no resolution, no prospect of anything coming out, nowhere to go in my life, with my life. That's when I got the message. But I had to get there. Verse 21. This I recall to my mind, when I remember this, therefore have I hope, a wonderful, wonderful anticipation and expectation. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. The mercies of the Lord, the loyalty and devotion and faithfulness of God to his covenant, to his commitment to be who he is, to follow through with what he has said, and to finish the job. Now, so, it is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed. Why isn't there the ruined temple, ruined city? Why not ruin me? Why not ruin the remnant? Why not ruin the rest of us and eliminate us? But he doesn't. We are not consumed. Why not? Because of his mercies, his wonderful mercy. Now, in the light of that, I'll pick it up, verse 24. The Lord is my portion, saith my soul. Therefore will I hope in him. I'm hoping. I didn't have any hope. Verse 18, my hope perishes. But when I relook at everything and I see the bankruptcy of my own heart, the inability to be found in my own being, I am so little and so limited. Then I remembered. And it isn't anything to do with me. My hope, everything that's here now, is going to come to pass. As we shared the other day, time and the clock and the calendar are there. They don't stop for anybody. Time and tide wait for nobody. And down the corridor we go. And whatever you had today, it's almost all over. And you'll never have it again, because tomorrow morning, it'll be a whole nother day. Now, you'll be the same body, same job perhaps, but it will never be the same. Today will not be repeated. You would think it might, but it will not be. It's gone. Hope. The wonderful moment, movement, and the moment to keep us in a healthy state of mind as we go forward. Hope in the light of the future. Now, having said that, and you'll pick it up if I can, we said in verse 24, therefore will I hope in him. Going down to verse 26, it is good that a man should hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for a man that he bear the yoke of his youth. In order to develop, in order to grow, in order to mature, you have to grow up. You have to be exercised, experienced to grow. You have to go to school, for instance, to learn to reading, writing, and arithmetic. You have to go through the process to get somewhere. Remember thy Creator in the days of what? Of thy youth. Because you have to go through that. And when you take that away from somebody, which they're doing today, the young people, way down at 11, 10 years old, are into stuff. that they shouldn't even need to have to consider. And thus we have oodles of problems in the adult world. Now, in the light of that, here we are looking, remember in verse 27, it is good for man that he bear the yoke of his youth. You want to remember thy Creator. You want to grow and learn. You don't want to forfeit the age you are right now and let it go by. Because where you are right now and how you handle now is going to be the basis of and the background of how you're going to handle tomorrow. So you don't want to let it say, well, I'm not young anymore. Well, neither am I, I think. A little young. But in the process, you know, here we are going down the corridor. God, I want to buy up the opportunity. I want to take and redeem the time. I don't want to do that. Now, knowing that, so God, I want to take advantage. And thus, I must have to do the rest here. Verse 28. Remember, bear the yoke of his youth. You want to go through whatever it takes to grow up. You do want to grow up, but you do want to go through everything within reason to grow up. If you don't do that, you haven't grown up with good development. And thus, verse 28, he sitteth alone and keepeth silence to be calm, because he hath borne it upon him. In other words, what do you want to do, Jeremiah? Looking at you know Israel had opportunity to repent, and it didn't. You were given, between you and Ezekiel and the rest of them, you all gave, Nahum and Habakkuk, you all gave wonderful help to them, but they didn't take it. And now here we are. And my hope perishes. It really happened. It really, 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 you let it happen in Jerusalem. And to the temple, absolutely. And therefore, that's what really happened. That's reality. Reality has to be faced and rightly approached and handled. Jeremiah, here you are. And to the Israelite, to the remnant, remember the yoke of their youth. Remember why this happens. Why is it happening? And, verse 28, and if you are getting the message, what do you, with a yoke? Yoke of oxen. Take my yoke upon you, Matthew 11:29. Take my yoke. The yoke, you put your head under the yoke, and you are submitting, you are surrendering to the yoke. And the yoke is going to govern and guide where you go. So if you put the yoke on, I got to be careful of my ear. They took bone out of my ear, cartilage, and put it in my eyes so that when I look at you, the bone will come out just like this. Then I'll be able to go to Hollywood and star in one of those. Things, you know. Now, you've got to remember your youth. You've got to remember now, and you're going to submit. Here's the yoke. You don't fight it. You submit to it. Thus, keep that word submit. You're going to submit to the working of God, to the will of God. In verse 28, he sitteth alone and keepeth silence, calmly trusting, because he hath borne it upon him. I understand God is doing what he's doing. I don't know all the answers, but I know God is doing it, and let it happen. Therefore, silence. Next thing, verse 29. He putteth his mouth in the dust. If so be, there may be hope. Is there hope? I don't want to louse it up with a whole lot of my thoughts, a whole lot of worry and want and frustration and fear. I don't want to get all tied up in my mind. I don't want to get all tied up in here so that I lose a correct viewing of the reality of the world around me and the God who's in the middle of it. I don't want to lose that. So I have to, what? Shh. And it we shared, putting his mouth in the dust. That is a Near Eastern way to say complete submission. Putting your mouth in the dust, don't say anything. Quiet. Quiet. Shh. And when your mouth's in the dust, you don't say a lot. Again, in verse 30, he giveth his cheek to him that smiteth him. He is filled full with reproach. In my submission, in my youth, in my training, in my growing up, in the exercise of developing, I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to have a complete submission. And here, with the cheek, my captive is going to take me, and I don't fight my captive. I surrender to him, and he can whack me, and I'll do nothing. Complete surrender. Complete submission to what God was doing. Complete surrender to what God was doing. You're not going to fight God. You aren't going to bother, make a big deal about it. You're going to look to God, and you're going to understand to be quiet. And thus, in verse 31, for the Lord will not cast off forever. No, everything's for the moment, for God to work out things. Well, verse 32, but though he cause grief, yet will he have compassion according to the multitude of his mercies. For he doth not afflict willingly. God doesn't go. God, say it another way to make it easy for you. God has no pleasure in the death of the wicked. God is not excited about bad and evil. God doesn't do that. He doesn't do that at all. And nor grieve the children of men. God doesn't go and grieve them. He doesn't grieve them. People do, but God doesn't. And without going into, because I'm trying to get to where I'm going here, I'm trying to give you a little background for this. And in verse, you see the word grieve? God isn't trying to make everything miserable, painful. And then he's going to illustrate it with humans. To crush under his feet all the prisoners of the earth. God didn't come to put us into bondage. He came to set us free from bondage, from sin, suffering, sorrow. He came to rescue us. He didn't come to make us prisoners of it. He came to get us out of prison. God, you don't grieve. No, I don't. I'm not there to make trouble. I'm not there to make it bad. I'm trying to get it fixed. Verse 35, to turn aside the right of a man before the face of the Most High, to make right, to do the right thing, to present the rights. And an easy way, you might want to remember that without, I can't get into all this, I'll never get done. In the process, remember the Declaration of Independence? Second paragraph. That we might be able to exercise these unalienable rights that cannot be transferred, right? Secondary. Unalienable rights, no one can own them. They belong to a person, and they are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Your declaration. God, what are you saying way back here? I gave people the right to believe, the right to choose, the right to think, not make them slaves. I gave them the right. In our declaration, that is to be noted. our rights. That's why we're different than most all the countries of the world. Now, and subserve a man in his cause. Someone's trying to do right and trying to get it fixed, then you don't get in his way, you try to help him. The Lord approveth not. The Lord doesn't try to louse everything up. And thus, sliding, verse 37, who is he that saith, and it cometh to pass, when the Lord commandeth it not? God, you are absolutely who you are, and you are in charge, and therefore we're going to submit to what you're doing and what has happened in Jerusalem. Verse 38, out of the mouth of the Most High proceedeth not evil and good, not evil and good. God doesn't try it. God makes it, there's the suffering wrongfully and suffering rightfully. Wherefore, verse 39, doth a living man complain? For a man, complain, a man for the punishment, wherefore, or why, doth a living man complain? A man for the punishment of his sins. Why do you complain about what's happening? Why do you think it happens? I didn't plan it. Everyone reaps what they sow. Society reaps what they sow. I'm long before being angry, but it does happen. So when you're sitting there and complaining, why? Take another look at humanity. Take a look at yourself in the mirror. I didn't do it. Isn't it amazing? I'm merciful to you in the process. We are not consumed because of your mercies. Wow. Now, and thus, let us search and try our ways, verse 40, and turn again to the Lord. Let us lift up our heart with our hands unto God in the heavens. We have transgressed and have rebelled, and thou hast not pardoned. God, so Jeremiah, Lamentations, face reality. Don't run away from it. You want hope, you want expectancy, you want to get through it, then go be realistic about it and don't hide from it. If you don't want to have a complete collapse. A complete collapse is not the end. You don't fall to the ground like the temple ruins. You don't just, it's all over. Now, in the light of that, in that wonderful submission to God, to his what he's done, what he allowed, over to Psalm 46. In Psalm 46. Now remember, Psalm 46. Remember we did it a little while ago, going back with Hezekiah, 100 years ago approximately, 100 years back. And Sennacherib, the Assyrians were coming in to get Jerusalem. Hezekiah stuck with God, he prayed, and God gave him the victory, and Sennacherib's army coming right down on top of Jerusalem, and boom, they hit a big wall they couldn't see, couldn't get past it. And then God took care of his whole army, his whole army, got rid of them, just like the Egyptians in the Red Sea, got rid of them. What a wonderful thing that was. That's what Psalm 46 is. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Now, and what I want to tie together, if I can, do you see over in chapter 46, verse 10, be still and know that I am God. Be still. Cause yourself to be still. You make yourself still. Hush. Make yourself quiet. Submit in the light of my awesome person. honor me, submit, shh, be still. Before you say anything about anything, anybody, any event, any person or thing in your life, be still. And know that I am God. We just did it a little bit in Lamentations chapter 3. Now, into Psalm 46, and think of Hezekiah, if you would. A refuge, God is our refuge. He's the place that is inaccessible, impregnable place, high place, tower. God, you are the place of safety, not the temple. They were hiding in the temple as a den. You have made my house a den of thieves, robbers. You have made it a hideout. The temple is just a temple. God took it down. It's the God of the temple. The God of the temple. And thus, Psalm 46, you are at the refuge. Not stone, brick, shelter. You are the place of safety and security, God. You are. Be still. Submit. I'm God. Shh. Down in the dust. Turn the cheek. Submit. Surrender. Don't fight me. Don't fight me. You'll lose. Now, Psalm 46, just getting the flavor of it a little bit. God is a refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. And I can almost read it as quickly as anything. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. God, everything could fall apart. I mean, everything. Ground goes out from underneath and there's nowhere to go and wow, all downhill. Uh-huh. There is a but, in all I've said, all of that. There is a river, the streams thereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. Where God is. Where God is. There's a place where God is. A place, a position, a place where God is. Hang on to that. It's a city. It's a place. It's God. God's place. Uh-huh. Not only God's place, verse 5, God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. So not only is it the right place, it's the right person. Right place, right person. God's there. That's why it's the right place. Now, and, if I may, verse 6, And you want to say, is God, is it safe? Is it secure? Uh-huh. The heathen raged. They had a great uproar. The kingdoms were moved. Everyone that Babylon, Rome, Media, Persia, Greece, Rome, name it. It only is there for so long and God moves it. And you're sitting there, well, they're powerful. No, they aren't all powerful. The nations are, yes, you know, in Isaiah 40, as a drop of a drop in a bucket. What nation? So God said, what are you making? I told you, be still. But, hold it. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice and the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. You're right, he's the shelter. He's the hiding place. He's where we go that's impregnable, inaccessible. And come, behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath made in the earth. And here, looking at in Lamentations, here's the Jerusalem in desolation. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He allows them to happen. Everything gets ruined, but then it's all replaced. He maketh the wars to cease unto the ends of the earth. He maketh the bow. He cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. Submit quietly. Don't fight me. Verse 11. The Lord of hosts is with us. The Lord of hosts is with us. He's with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Wow. Now, the God of Jacob. But Jacob, you were a rascal. He was. And God blessed him, though, because he had a heart for God. He did. And God had, you know, when finally he did get Jacob, and Jacob's name became Israel, the father of the 12 tribes. When that happened, God had to go and cripple him. He crippled him. So Jacob couldn't run, literally couldn't run anymore. He was really crippled. That's a content. Wow. Now, having said that, Jacob, the God of Jacob. Now, why do you say that to Israel? Israel needs to know that. The God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. You didn't say Isaac. You could have said Abraham. But you did say Jacob. Because Jacob had his problems. And God had to gracefully go through and allow the process to take place in order to get the product. He had to let all of this happen to Israel, even to the temple in ruins. It has to be. It's reality. Now, over there, Isaiah 41. Isaiah 41. And God, of course, keeps referring to Jacob. And in the process, in chapter 41 of Isaiah, verse 8, "But thou, Israel, art my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend, thou whom I have taken from the ends of the earth, and called thee from the chief men thereof. And I said unto thee, thou art my servant. I have chosen thee, and not cast thee away." Verse 10, "Fear thou not, for I am with thee." The God of Jacob is with us. Which God? The God of Jacob. You want to know. Aha. "Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed." Why not? "For I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. Yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. Behold, all they that were incensed against thee shall be ashamed and confounded. They shall be as nothing. They that strive with thee shall perish. Thou shalt seek them and shall not find them. Even them that contended with thee, they that war against thee shall be as nothing, and as a thing of naught." Now, Jacob, why? For, verse 13, "I am the Lord thy God. I, the Lord thy God, will hold thy right hand, saying unto thee, fear not, I will help thee. I am a refuge and strength." Now to get the punch line. "Fear not, thou worm Jacob." You worm. Out of the dust. Dust. Where did you find Jacob? I found him in the dust. I had to bring the man to an end. Like Abraham, I brought him to the end of himself, where he had to say to God, "I will not let thee go." Do you remember the rest? Unless you bless me. Jacob reached a point that he wasn't going to let go till God blessed him. What do you think of that? Huh? Wow. How about you? I'm not going to let go till God blesses me. Wow. Got to stay close. You're going to hang on like that. Got to stay close. Now, and thus, verse 14, "Thou fear not, thou worm Jacob, and ye men of Israel. I will help thee, saith the Lord, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. I'm able to go and do a wonderful thing for you, and you have to go and trust me. God knows, you know our frame, you know that we are dust." And you know that we are unable to follow through with anything, with any consistency, because of our old nature and our character and characteristics. So God, we know, you know that you are going to be wonderfully faithful in whatever you begin, and you're going to finish it. This knowing, this wonderful knowing, I need to know, believers need to know, Jeremiah needed to know in order to have hope. The remnant of Israel then needed to know in order to have hope. That would include Daniel and Ezekiel, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. It would include all of them. They need to hang in there. They need to hang in. And in the process, God was humbling their heart. You have to go down, going down. Humbling means going down, not up. Not engulfed with ecstasy to go up. God, see? Wow! No. No. Nope. Down. Down to the dust. Why? God said you have to go down. You can't know the wonderment of what I want to do and who I am unless you submit and surrender to my person and my will. I want you to grow. I want you to know. I don't want you to fight me. So now, having said that, keeping that in mind, if you would, and so not ecstasy, but reality, and thus in the process, God, you're going to go and do a wonderful thing. I am. We have to go down in order to come up. You do. You're humbled and thus exalted. You can't come up. You just can't keep going up. You got to go down. You got to make sure. Well, we'll pick it up in just a moment. Over, if you would please, to Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 6. Let me try to illustrate. Isaiah chapter 6, we got to go down and not up. And Jeremiah, you're going to have no hope. You're going to have no refuge and no help as long as you fight me. But when you surrender and submit, all that seems utterly unredeemable, unfixable, lousy. It really isn't. It really isn't. And as we've done in recent date, you know, the impossible becomes very possible with God. Now, so Isaiah chapter 6, illustration. Isaiah is looking to the king, Uzziah. Uzziah died. He dies. And Isaiah the prophet is counting on him to make the government work, to make the everything work out in society, in the world they live in these states. Think of our own country. And in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims. Each one had six wings. With twain he covered his face. With twain, with two, he covered his feet. With two, he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. Now, Isaiah, you're going from looking out around. The king died. Society isn't very good. It isn't coming out good. It isn't going anywhere. How are we going to fix things? Got to look up. And there is the Lord God on the throne. Holy, holy, holy. Wow. The whole earth is full of his glory. Uh-huh. And thus, Isaiah, proper response. Then said I, verse 5, Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. And it is that background where he says in verse 8, I also heard a voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Then said I, here am I, send me. You know why? Because he humbled himself in the light of God's awesome presence. He was still, quiet, submissive, and it wasn't whether the king was alive or the temple was up or whether or the government, the gasoline was 10 cents a gallon. It had nothing to do with anything. It had everything to do with God. Not the temple building, the God of the temple. He's the refuge. He's the place. Now, having said that, and thus woe is me. And so, Isaiah, that's why God picked him. God picked him. And yes, Isaiah, and now you want to go, you're right next door here, over to Ezekiel. And you remember in Ezekiel is one of the captives in Babylon looking back, getting news that Nebuchadnezzar has leveled the temple. So the news is coming over the telegraph, as it were, over to them. And in the process, now, God, what are you going to do for Ezekiel to help him? Because it's terrible news. Ezekiel 1, verse 26. And above the firmament that was over their heads was the likeness of a throne, as the appearance of a sapphire stone. And upon the likeness of the throne was the likeness as the appearance of a man above and upon it. So here, out in this, without going into the marvelous chapter 1, without all of the dynamic, to say the least, out there, out in the middle of all of this energy and power, up there was the throne, and a man was on it. Isaiah, the throne, earth is his footstool. But for Ezekiel, he sees no one. There's no one except massive, dynamic, majestic power and God sitting on the throne. Thus, verse 27. I'm going to skip verse 28. As the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. When I saw it, I fell upon my face, and I heard a voice of one that spake. I was humbled. The awesomeness. Psalm 46:10. Be still. Submit. Awesome. The awesome wonder. Quiet. Quiet. Now, in the process, over. Oh. Luke. Luke and chapter 5. Luke in chapter 5. And you remember, if you would, in Luke 5, go to verse 5. And verse 4 even. And when we had left speaking, he said unto Simon, launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a draught. And Simon answered and said unto him, Master, we have toiled all night. And they were fishing all night long, and we have taken nothing. Nevertheless, because you said it, in other words, we have nothing in our hand to show for our efforts and energy except our bankruptcy. We have no fish. Therefore, verse 5, nevertheless, at thy word, I will let down the net. And so Peter did that. And when they had this done, they enclosed a great multitude of fishes, and their net break. How much? Aha. And they beckoned, verse 7, unto their partners, which were in the other ship, that they should come and help them. So here's the two ships trying to pull that net in with all their fish. And they came and filled both the ships so that they began to sink because the fish were so heavy. How's that? That'd be like five loaves and two fishes. He said, why don't you just give me a little basket and watch what I can do with it. I'm going to take and fill your two ships so that they'd sink if I didn't help you. That's how much I'm going to do. Now, you couldn't catch anything all night? No, we couldn't. No, we couldn't. But boy, God, you made an impression. Aha, uh-huh. How much so? Verse 8. When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees and saying, depart from me, because I am a sinful man, O Lord. Do you get it? Got to go down. And God lifted him up so that he would go down. God knocked the temple down so that they would go down so they could go up. God, you do that. Uh-huh. God. You know the wonderful statement, you all the kinds of things. And my God shall supply, Philippians 4:19, what? All your what? And you need $1 million for this, and you need that, need that. No. God said what you need. If I need to make you bankrupt, if I need to make you ill, if I do need anything, I'm going to do all that you need. And I'm going to do it for Jerusalem and the temple and the people. And we're still living in the effect of that day right now. Now, God, if we're going to submit to you, that's right. Shh, quiet. Don't fight me. Learn to trust me and ask. Don't ask why, ask what. God, what am I to learn? I don't want to fight. I don't want to fight you, God. I want to learn. I want to be the immediate beneficiary of what's going on. So now, God, having said that, and you remember in the book of Acts, don't you, where Paul was saved on the Damascus Road, and Paul was zealous for Judaism to get the cursed Christianity off the table because it would ruin Judaism. And he was one zealous Jew. He loved Israel. And you know, he met the Lord Jesus Christ on the Damascus Road, Acts 9. And when he met the Lord Jesus Christ, he had to kick himself because he was hunting the Christians to kill them, imprison them, and put them out of business because they represented the Lord Jesus Christ. And Paul had to eat humble pie and said, Lord, what would thou have me to do? Whole change. 180 degrees change. You had to collapse. A complete collapse of oneself, in order that there might be an awakening. Not. God, you aren't trying to collapse the purpose and your goal. No. But there needs to be a complete collapse of self so that the wonderful reality of who God is and his blessing can belong to a person, a boy, a girl, a man, a woman. Self-revelation. That's what we're looking at. Woe is me, I'm a man of unclean lips. In me dwelleth no good thing. All of that wonderment of going down, what does that do? What that does is it helps me understand self. So that I'm not what? Seeking to have self-preservation. Understand? I got to preserve myself. Who I am. Who are you? Got to preserve myself, my plans, my dreams, my future. And who are you? Who am I? God said, I've got to get that out of the way so you can enjoy what I'm going to do for you. How can you enjoy being saved if you don't get there? Because you're trying to preserve yourself, you see. We aren't trying to preserve ourselves. Think of your blood flow. My blood flow. Wow. Think how small those, they're small. You know those veins are not arteries, they're like a hose. I'm kidding. But they're small. I mean, yeah, they're small. I got to tell you, I know they showed me one once. Not that, they showed me the thing. I said, man, you if you just twitched, you'd lose it. It was so small. I said, I can't have them that small. He said, that's what they are. Real small. Real small. I mean, I got a small. I'd have to show you. If you haven't seen it, you have to know how small it is. Man, you could eat a plum or something, a walnut, and go up and block it like nothing. God, how frail we are. How terribly frail we are. How wondrously made we are. Ah, now God, here we are. So we aren't trying, we're trying to preserve. You're not trying to preserve yourself. When you think about how wonderfully you're made and how awesome it takes for everything just to be in the right place at the right time to keep you alive. And all of a sudden, we aren't so hippity-hop, we're going out, you know. When you're 20 years old, we're long life. Hold it. You have no idea what a long life is yet. You may never make a long life. Not at all. No. God, we aren't trying to go and preserve ourselves. No. Thus, in closing, I'm sorry, I hope you got a little bit. Over. Isaiah 57. And would you please note? It isn't the temple. They were hiding in the temple to protect them, give them a sanctuary, a place where they could have their headquarters. God wasn't in the place. God had left the temple. God had left the temple. And when God's not in the bush, it's just an ordinary bush. When God's not in the temple, it's just an ordinary building. And if God isn't in the heart, you're just an ordinary person. Now, Isaiah 57, verse 15 in closing. Appreciate your patience. For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy, I dwell in the high and holy place with him. Aha. With him also that is of a contrite. The word contrite means to bring down to dust, to bring down, to crush, to crumble, to bring to dust. I dwell with him also that is of a contrite and humble spirit. To revive, to make fresh, to breathe, to rise anew, to make anew, to revive the spirit of the humble, and to revive, there's your little verb again, the heart of the contrite. My wonderful place, said God, is with the humbled heart. And like in Chronicles, his eyes go up and down, searching the land. For who would have a heart for him? If he could find someone that had a heart, that he could be strong in them. To find a man. Ah, to find a woman. To find a boy. To find a girl. Wow. That's sort of a wonderful thing, you know. So as we look out in our world, not going well, all over the world, movement. Well, but God, we are in the world, but what? We're not of it. If you're saved, you're a stranger and a what? A pilgrim. This is not your home, is it? This isn't your home. This body isn't your home. It's only for what? For the moment. Because can you take this home? Home. H-O, big H. No. No. Flesh and blood cannot take it home. It doesn't fit. It doesn't belong. It doesn't belong in my heaven. So I don't want you to be so busy trying to preserve it. Trying to make everything come out right in life. It isn't going to come out right. It's all unequal and unfair. Work, home, school, politics, pressure, everything, forget it. But with God, think of the Patriots. Is it all right to mention that? You want to play on God's team. And God never loses a game. Never. You want God's will? Submit, surrender, you never lose. You can't lose. That's the way it is. I'm sorry I went over it. Well, I'll be shorter next time. Anyway, I hope you got a little bit. Wonderful truths. Wonderful truths. Jeremiah, where would we be without you? Wow. Anyway, you may have a particular request. Remember the sick, the weak, the wayward, the